Thanks a lot. Thanks for the invitation, and thanks everybody for coming. So I want to tell you about the paper that we put out last October with Hirotaka, Kantoro, Yuji, and Casilla. And the thing we wanted to understand is what happens in eight dimensions, in particular in supersymmetric eight dimensional theories, when it comes to anomalies. I found some interesting observations that suggest the existence of some version of the Grisswald mechanism that operates on purely at the purely massive level. We call it the topological Grisswald mechanism. And I'll try to explain what it could be. We didn't actually finish formulating it, but it's likely that such a thing exists. So, okay, we all know that string theory is, if you understand quantum theory, a powerful tool to probe it. And if you're ambitious, you can ask, well, can I construct any quantum field theory out of string theory? I'm agnostic with respect to that. It's definitely a very hard question that I don't know how to answer at this point. So one thing you can try to answer is whether all supersymmetric quantum field theories can be engineered in string theory. And part of the motivation for starting thinking about these things is there has been a lot of work recently trying to understand which supersymmetric theories can be coupled consistently to quantum gravity theories. That goes under the name of the Swan-Blount. Here I will not use those ideas. So this is a purely a kind of classical, in a sense, quantum field theory analysis. And part of my motivation is understanding when do you need to include gravity in this discussion. So far we haven't found any. So once you assume supersymmetry, you can make some progress in the classification of supersymmetric quantum field theories. In more than 11 dimensions, if you try to impose supersymmetry, you start having excitations with too high helicity. The exception is perhaps a theory. If you view it as a theory with two directions of time, we don't understand this very well, so I won't say anything about that. In 11 dimensions is where we can start saying some things. So here you have 11 dimensional supergravity, you have only one. We believe this is a limit of string theory. So rather trivially, in 11 dimensions, string theory is universal. Every theory that seems consistent can be created out of string theory. Things become interesting in 10 dimensions. So here you have many possibilities, well, a few possibilities. Type 2a, type 2b in the inequality 2 sector. If you try to construct a theory which is supersymmetric but has no gravity, you will quickly find out that you have an anomaly. And you can couple the theory to supergravity supersymmetrically, and then use the green source mechanism. And naively, the way it was originally stated, this permits these algebras in 10 dimensions. Of these four possibilities, two are realized by string theory and two are not. So for a while, almost 30 years, this was a puzzle. So this was the beginning of, in some sense, these Swan-Blount ideas. This is the simplest case in which one could have had a Swan-Blount, because it seems like you have more field theories than the ones that are realized by string theory. In this paper by Adams and DeWolf, they showed that we have to be more careful, and when you try to do Green-Schwarz supersymmetrically, these things are actually not there. So you actually have universality in 10 dimensions. Every theory that's consistent seems to be realized by string theory. And I should say, if anything's unclear, please interrupt. That'll be more fun. So, okay, the obvious question is going down in dimension, one by one. And already in 9 dimensions, or 8, which is very similar, the answer is quite unclear. Why? Because you have an equal to 1 theory in 9 or 8 dimensions. Supersymmetry implies that the fermions are in the joint. The joint is a real representation, and then you have no anomalies, or no local anomalies. On the other hand, the set of theories that we can construct out of string theory in 9 or 8 dimensions is very limited. I will list them in a couple of slides. So here we have already a huge tension. In field theory, we can construct an infinite class of theories. Pick any gauge algebra you like, and since you have no anomalies. And what we can do in string theory is much more limited. We have something like 3 or 4 theories. So, okay, we're thinking about these things. We started thinking about anomalies more carefully, and we found that there are some anomaly conditions that narrow this gap somewhat. So many of the theories you could have written here, so in field theory, are actually anomalous. You are a bit more careful. The gap hasn't been completely closed, and there's plenty of extra work to be done, but at least for the moment we have some convergence. Just to mention it, although I will not discuss it, in 60 you have local anomalies, which are very powerful again, and then there have been some work trying to match what you can do with local anomalies and what you can get from string theory. But the status is unclear. It's much more complicated. But at least I think we should, in 9 or 8 dimensions, this is very clean. We should be able to say, we should be able to find out the proper answer. So in 9 dimensions, what do we know how to get? Well, let me do the n equal to 1 case, n equal to 2 is obvious. So n equal to 1, you have 4 theories. Let's say 4 components of the modular space, if you wish. There are 2 of rank 2, which you can describe as putting M theory on the Klein bottle. Another one is putting type 2A with 08 plus and 08 minus. So this all seems to be consistent. Rank 10, so by rank I just mean you go into the Coulomb branch how many you want to have, as usual. So for rank 10, you can put M theory in the Möbius band or the CHL string. These things are the same theory. And in rank 18, this is the most familiar one. You put M theory in the cylinder, or you consider heterotic on S1, or you put type 2A with 07 minus. Sorry, 08 minus. So this is all we can do in 9 dimensions. In 8 dimensions, similarly, we find 3 possibilities. So basically, the first 2 in the previous slide unify into a single component of modular space once you put them in a circle. And you have this rank 4 compactification that you can describe in type 2b as type 2b in a torus with 2 or 7 minuses and 2 or 7 pluses. Rank 12 is similar. You get 3 or 7 minuses on 1 or 7 plus. And to cancel that, you have to put a little bit of T7. And rank 20, in which you put 4 or 7 minuses and 16 and 7. So 3 possibilities. This is all we can do in string theory at n equal to 1. You want a bit more. Well, this is a nice formalism. Another nice one is going to F theory, the first singularities, etc. Either way, the lesson here is that there are very few things you can do. So, well, n equal to 1 in 8 dimensions is a modular space given by the scalars in the vector multiplets. You give a BEF, a generic BEF. You go to a Coulomb branch and you Higgs to U1 to the rank of the Higgs group. Rank was 4, 12, and 20, like here. And at certain points in the Coulomb branch, you can have some abelian enhancements. If you study modular space carefully, the things you find in the non-compactifications are things with algebras SUN, SO2N, SPN, and E6, E78. And again, this is all. So there are clear gaps here. And what we try to understand is why these algebras don't appear. Okay. Is the question clear? So let me summarize the results. So the ones that have algebra F4 and SO2N plus 1, these do not exist quantum mechanically. These have an anomaly. Even if the representation, even if the representation is real, there's a global anomaly. We find no anomaly for these gauge groups, the ones that you can construct out of string theory, for exception SP. And surprisingly, there's no anomaly for G2. So that's the question. Why is G2 not having an anomaly, even if we cannot construct it? SP also doesn't have any kind of global anomaly of the standard kind, the one that we can construct it. But we find it has an anomaly of a more subtle kind that we'll discuss. So this shows that the 8-dimensional equal to 1 theory with H algebra SP are actually inconsistent quantum mechanically. What we conjecture and we partially build is a mechanism for canceling this anomaly. So we call this the polygonal Green-Schwarz mechanism. I'll describe it. And we conjecture that this is what happens in the work volume of an O7 plus play. So this is something that you can get in a string theory very easily. Since we require for the theory to make sense. And if we really claim that this thing is inconsistent, it will naively kill this thing. But one possible solution is for this theory to be the real theory in the oriented full play. And as I will explain, the topological quantum theory you need to construct is involved. And we have not been able to construct it. I have some hints it might exist. And we have some analogous problems in lower dimensions where we can actually construct the theory. So I'll try to explain those things.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah, sure.
So when you have consistent theories, do you imagine consistent up to a certain scale or?
This is anomaly, so this is all in the IR.
Okay. So you're just asking about the consistency of the low energy.
Yeah, more precisely what I'm asking is whether the partition function has a well-defined phase. This was then the autonomous. Another question is whether I can couple this to UV completion and that make it more constant. My personal motivation in this program is trying to exhaust everything I can do with anomalies. So prove that, for example, these theories have a consistent definition for the phase of the path integral, then that proves that there's no anomaly. And then you have proven that, then you have to start worrying, if some of these don't appear in string theory, then why? And that might be a UV constraint. So one motivating puzzle, one case that was understood a while ago, is in type 2b, what happens if you put half a D7 brain on top of the O7 minus one? And more precisely, what I mean is an odd number of D7s in the covering space, and then you put in O7 minus. So in a string perturbation theory, you can do this. And naively, will lead to some eight-dimensional theory with gauge algebra SO2n plus 1. This seems problematic non-perturbatively. First of all, we believe that we understand how these things uplift to M theory. And there's nothing in the M theory geometric picture that could have this singularity. In the Codera classification, which is technically a thing that classifies which kind of singularities you get in the elliptic vibration, there's nothing with the monodromy that SO2n plus 1 would have. And related to this, if you go to the M-theory dual picture, we think we understand what happens with the orientiful types. But in this particular case, there's no natural guess for what the frozen flux could be. And also, if you try to probe this configuration with a D3 probe, you'll find that, well, the D3 has gauge group as U2. And the odd number of 7 brains lead to an odd number of fundamentals, which gives rise to a Witten anomaly. So the probe is inconsistent. So I also think carefully how seriously you take this. In principle, these two things hint strongly that this thing is inconsistent, but they don't prove it. It could just be that we don't have the right well picture, or we're missing something out of the building, or who knows. This one is more serious, but you have to be careful. That the probe is inconsistent might mean that the theory is inconsistent, or the probe is inconsistent. So you have to have that clear in your head. So the calculation we did was basically show that you don't need a probe argument, the theory in 8 dimensions is already inconsistent. So let me start by reviewing anomalies. Of course, you all know this, but this is more to set the language and everything. So consider Lagrangian theory, with some global symmetry G. I restricted to Lagrangians because everything I will analyze today and manage is much simpler. So introduce a background connection for the symmetry. And then you compute the path integral as a function of the connection. And here you have some fields, which in our case will be the fermions. Then the node by M, the space of all connections that you can put, all background fields. And you have an anomaly whenever you cannot define the path integral as a function of the manifold. So it might happen that Z is a sort of vibration and it's not well defined in a point. So there are two kinds of problems you may have. This is basically a Lyman bundle. So you might have curvature, small loops make it a phase, and this is what we call the local anomaly. Or it might happen that the bundle is flat, but still it has some monodromies. And we call that global anomalies. So I'll focus mostly on this, or rather I'll focus on theories which don't have this problem, but may have this problem. So, one thing that simplifies your life is that if a field can get a mass without breaking the symmetry, then you can integrate it out, you can forget about it. That's nice because if you have a field in some representation R, think of this as a fermion, we can include the field in the conjugate representation, and the action which is the conjugate, and then once you have this field and this field, you can construct a mass term. That means that the theory with both has a well-defined phase for the path integral. And the theory with both is the theory of one times the theory of the other. I'm looking at the free case. Now this is the conjugate. That means that the whole action is just conjugate. So that tells you that the absolute value square of the path integral is well defined, even if each one of these independently may not be. So this is a standard statement, derived in a little bit hand-wavy way, that the modulus of the path integral is well defined, but you might still have a problem with the phase. So, well, as I mentioned, something that was a little confusing in the beginning. If you have a path integral which is a section of the Lyman-Mandel and the bundle is non-trivial, the theory is still consistent. So far, I don't have anything bad. What you have is that you have a Toft anomaly. So one famous example is n equal to 4 superior means has an R symmetry, and the R symmetry is anomalous. But that's okay. And the theory has a conserved symmetry still. The R symmetry is conserved. Everything this tells you is that the symmetry cannot be gauged. Why? Because gauging involves integration of the orbits. You cannot define it, then the integral may give you nonsensical results. Okay, so this was a very quick review of anomalies, but just think of the question I'm trying to answer here is, can I define in a nice way the phase of this object? So how do I answer this question? Okay, so first I start by looking at the traditional global anomalies. And the logic here is a little bit weird, so I'm not going to answer this question yet, although I'll give details later on how you could answer it properly. What I will do is check examples. So I will check some spacetime, some bundles, and see if I have any problems with it. It may happen that in the examples I have checked, I don't have any problem, but maybe in some things I haven't checked, I do have a problem. So for answering this question, you need to do something more complicated than what I did here. So one thing that was already checked by Witten is what I would call the traditional global anomaly. So consider a symmetry transformation in flat space. So that something goes from a spacetime, a small patch, to a group. And we impose that this goes to 1 at infinity. So it can be considered a gauge transformation. The idea here is, of course, eventually I want to gauge this. I want to see if there's an abstraction to gauging. So it's natural to restrict to this class. So the resulting set of transformations are classified by homotopy groups. These are the maps from the sphere to the group. And okay, let's see if the following thing gives us any trouble. Choose one representative of this class of maps and consider the family of connections given by the pure gauge times a factor. Now, even if this thing here is pure gauge, once I put this thing in front, it's not. I choose the boundary conditions that this guy at minus infinity is zero, so you go from the zero connection to something which is pure gauge and plus infinity. But in the middle, it does not have to be pure gauge. So this defines a loop in the space of connections, and a global anomaly would be, would appear if what I get at the end is not the same as I get at the beginning. As to the anomaly is a phase, so the thing I want to measure is whether this thing is one or not. And I will use this notation sometimes. C of zero just means because at minus infinity I get the zero connection, and this is the gauge transformation, which is pure gauge. So I want to compute that kind of thing. Okay. And the last restriction will be interesting in the case in which the fermions are real. That means that you could construct a gauge invariant coupling like this that respects, well, respects the symmetric group G. But actually, because the fermions are in a representation which is real, this thing identically vanishes. So the simplest case is imagine the fermion has no indices, no spin, no spacetime indices, no gauge group indices, in which case this vanishes simply because these are Grossmann numbers that anti-commute. So if this is in a real representation, the same thing is true. So even if you can write a mass coupling, naively, the coupling identically vanishes. So this tells you that you cannot give a mass to this guy, preserving the symmetry, so you might have a problem. The thing you can do is add another family of these guys and then write this kind of coupling. Now you give mass to both, so this tells you that the square of the path integral is well defined. So by the same argument as before, the anomaly is each value. So at most we get the same. This is nice because it's something topological, something that's a plus or a minus. Okay. So, the simplest example, or the most well-known example, is a four-dimensional value fermion in the fundamental of SU2. This is from the real representation. So the mass term is allowed, but it's zero. You can write it down, but you'll notice at some point it's zero. Since the fundamental of SG2 is a pseudo-real representation, and the violet spinor is, again, the fundamental of SG2, and you will see that EOTEC1 has indices here and here, you end up with a real representation for which you cannot write the mass term, or the mass term identically vanishes. And we then found that, and this has a very important implication, that the partition function at the trivial connection and the gauge transform trivial connection are actually different by itself. If you choose the gauge transformation living in the non-trivial generator of pi 4. Okay, so I assume most of you have seen this. I won't go into too much detail. The thing I'll try to describe in more detail is how to generalize this. We want to do this in 8 dimensions for more complicated groups. And the argument that we then use is difficult to generalize. So you're supposed to compute a mod 2 index in some 9-dimensional sphere for some complicated gauge bundle. I have no clue how to do it. Luckily, there was an argument shortly after. It was originally pointed out by Witten in this paper, then elaborated in this paper by Litter and Nair. And this paper has a very nice review with all the details spelled out. So if something that I say is confusing, maybe, well, you can, of course, ask me, but you can also read this paper. It clarifies things. So basically, it is quite simple. In SG2, you cannot deform the bundle that you want to zero, because pi 4 of SG2 is C2. So some things that you can deform to entity. But you can always embed SG2 bundles into SG3. You can view any SG2 bundle as SG3 bundle. And once you're inside SG3, you can deform any bundle to zero. And that's because pi 4 of SG3 is zero. So before, you couldn't connect the non-trivial element of SG2 to zero. But once you're inside SG3, you can, by a family of connections that are inside SG3. But of course, what happens is that if you really want to do this properly, well, we started with a doublet of SG2 to construct a proper representation of SG3. The simplest thing you can do is add the singlet, and you get the 3 of SG3. And the 3 of SG3 has a local anomaly. So as you do this movement in SG3, you might pick up an anomalous phase. Now it's a standard local anomaly. That's much easier to compute. But the nice thing is that you study the singlet. This will not do anything to the phase of the partition function as a singlet neutral. So by tracing this family of connections, you can pick up the phase of this guy, which is the one you care about. Okay, so the rest is more or less standard. So you view the anomaly as coming from a composition of a small local transformation in SU3. And then you use this scent. So construct the Chern-Simons density, which is whose D is the anomaly polynomial. And the anomaly is given by the gauge variation of that, like this. So if you want to construct the anomaly, this is the integral over your spacetime of the anomaly polynomial. And you can construct this by this equation, simply by integrating the Chern-Simons functional over some ball with boundary your space. Okay, so if you do this, I will just drop this part explicitly. And B here is just any ball. It's just convenient to have a spacetime which is, you need to choose some D plus one dimensional manifold that has this boundary your spacetime. My spacetime is the sphere. The simplest space with these properties is the ball. So let me choose that. So this is probably familiar. If not, please interrupt. Happy to slow down. So since we're in SG3, we can deform to the trivial bundle. And the important thing here is that Chern-Simons density, this omega I'm writing, this thing doesn't change if I do an anomaly-free transformation. So anything that's in particular inside the SU2 subgroup, which doesn't have local anomalies, will not affect this omega here. This tells you that the integral doesn't really depend on the SU3 structure of the background connection, but rather depends on the projection to this cosine. And that simplifies life. Why? Because the picture I have, I should have really drawn pictures, I apologize, is that you have some some bold, plus one, and I'm being a little bit general, but this is really D equal to Feynman doing the Witten thing. And here in D plus one dimensions, so the boundary of D plus one is D, and here I chose in the boundary some G, which is a non-trivial element of pi D of the group, which for D equal to 4, G equal to C2, this is C2. There's always a way of extending this. And what I'm doing here is integrating this omega over this space. So the next thing is that since I'm not really next to 3, but in the coset, and this guy is here, this G belongs to SU2, for doing the integral, I can really go from this, which is the ball, to S D plus 1. So I can contract the boundary to a point. Is this clear? This is kind of an important point. This doesn't depend on the actual value in SU3, only on the coset. On the boundary, I'm purely in SU2, so in the coset, this projects to a point. So I can collapse the disk, sorry, the ball to the sphere, and then I have the integral of this guy over this. Okay. So, what I just argued for, perhaps in all the details you have, but is that what you construct in this way by computing anomalies, some sort of homomorphism between the homotopy classes of this coset to R. That's what the anomaly is, formally. Of course, you want to compute it. So how do you do this? Well, consider the sort of exact sequence of groups. Sorry, this is not a group, but you are. So you have a, this is a fibration. Have the embedding of SU2 and SU3, and you come up to the coset. Now you take the long exact sequence in homotopy, and this tells you that there is a, well, this exact sequence here, and it terminates here just because pi 4 of SU3 will be the next term, is 0. So this is a familiar sort of exact sequence that you can basically solve completely. Right? This alpha has to be multiplication by 2, and this beta is reduction modulo 2. So I'm interested in some homomorphism of this guy to the reals. Why? Because I want to compute something here. But I think I know it's actually this one. So the exact sequence allows me to link these different steps. So here we understand what happens. If you take the generator of pi 5 of SU3 and you integrate the Chern-Simons density over that generator, you get 1, or well, the unit of the anomaly. You take the fundamental representation. This is the statement that the, for example, the index of a single fermion is 1. Anything else, if you join other representations, will be a multiple of this. So here we know what is the anomaly, so to speak, or this integral, rather, for this object, pi 5 is this is 1 in the natural unit. This map is projection, sorry, multiplication by 2. And this map is reduction by 2. So what we want to do is to get this object here and embed it here. And that tells you that the anomaly will be half of the anomaly we get here. So it's half in the natural units. So what you find then is that the anomaly associated to this generator is pi. Okay. So this is a quick review of the Witten anomaly viewed from the Salitre-Bernay viewpoint. And this is a very roundabout way. It's not a very transparent argument. But it allows you to generalize easily to other dimensions. And what you have is, well, first of all, you have to have pi 8 different from 0, then it goes to pi 4 equal to 0 in 4 dimensions. And this happens for these groups here. So only these groups can have global numbers of the way I'm computing. But you can repeat the argument, basically. You have to look at embeddings into a bigger group. For example, for F4, you can embed in E6. This is something that's quite well understood. So you get the exact sequence of the same kind. Precisely by the same arguments, you conclude that there's an anomaly here in the fundamental of F4. We're interested in the joint, but with a little bit of group theory, you can solve it. It's because the adjoint decomposes into the adjoint plus the fundamental. So if this guy is anomaly free and this guy has an anomaly, this guy must have an anomaly. So in this way, you prove that F4 has an anomaly. This is already one of the things that you wanted to prove. F4 that you couldn't construct in string theory is inconsistent quantum mechanically. Okay, and I won't bore you with the rest of the details, but you can extend analysis to the other cases. And you find that the things in blue don't have an anomaly of the kind that I'm checking for. You could have others, you know, this one. And red means that they have this anomaly. So we've proven them inconsistent. Okay, so this is the result of the analysis in using the Witten anomaly. You could have more complicated things, but it's one thing to check. Questions? No? So, what I just told you is basically that these theories don't have anomalies in flat space. We want to check whether this theory makes sense in any manifold with any gauge bundle. And there's an important loophole here. We could potentially couple to some topological quantum of the theory that, you know, if you say you put in some manifold and some of the bundle is giving you trouble, perhaps you can couple to some topological quantum of the theory that kills the bundle, as Witten suggested in this paper. Oh, sorry, Cyber suggested in this paper. So, for example, we could have a theory with this rich group. The anomaly may come from some bundles with non-trivial stiffer Whitney class, meaning that they're bundles of this group but not of G. So, you can fix this by coupling to some topological quantum of the theory that effectively takes this theory and predicts it to G. So something that removes the problematic bundles, as in this paper by Kapustin and Sally. So this is very general. You have to see in every example whether it works or not. So we give an example of a fixing that you can do in such a case in three dimensions. So the theory will be SUN mod CN with a fermion, which is in the adjoint representation, and which is Majorana. This theory we show has an anomaly, meaning one of these generalized anomalies. So for some bundles, we will have trouble. But there's some topological quantum theory you can couple it to that fixes the trouble. We conjecture that in eight dimensions, you can fix things in the same way, but I'll try to explain why we couldn't do it. It has to be more subtle. If any of you has any ideas, I'll be very happy to hear them. And you can also show, there's a simple argument, that this mechanism cannot cancel the traditional anomaly in flat space, meaning the one that we can compute. So the one associated to pi 8. So coupling to topological quantum theory might fix some of these problems. But if you find an anomaly in the pi 8 computation, as we did, then those theories are dead. There's nothing you can do to fix it. Okay. So consider spacetime of the form S4 times the rest of the dimensions. And choose the composition of the gauge group, which is SU2 times the rest. Now put a single instanton of the SU2 factor of the S4. So you have a fermion representation RG, and there's this group decomposition, it will decompose into representations of SU2 and H. And now you apply the index theorem to this SU2 instanton. So this gives you this number of zero modes in these representations of H, which is the thing that survives in this dimension. Okay, so everything I'm doing here is choosing a specific spacetime, putting some bundle, and seeing if they have trouble in defective theory in D minus four dimensions. If they have trouble, then this is a sign that the theory may be inconsistent. So if the effective theory in D minus four dimensions is inconsistent, if you can argue this, then the original theory is anomalous. You may be able to fix it based on topological quantum theory, but at least you have an inconsistency if you don't couple to the topological quantum theory. So here's an example. This is the example I mentioned before. You start with SO2n plus 1, the thing that gave you problems with the SO2n minus. So any global form of this algebra has a subgroup which is of this form. This is the algebra. and choose to put the instant on here, and this thing to be the effective group that survives in B minus four dimensions. We are looking at the joint, so that joint decomposes in this way. And what you find once you apply the index theorem is that the four dimensional of H is this particular representation. And now you have an SU2 with an odd number of matter multiplets, which again has the Witten anomaly. So this is a refraction of the argument I mentioned before, that D3 probing the 07 minus gives trouble. So this is the same thing, but expressed in terms of bundles. So you may or may not be able to cure this if you just look at this argument, but I just proved for you before that this theory actually has an anomaly of the Witten kind, the pi 8 kind, and the thing you're going to fix. So this theory is sick. So you can analyze the other cases, and in one case we found something that was surprising, which was the SP2N case. Everything else works straightforwardly. You get the same results as in the pi 8 analysis. But for SP2N, with n bigger than 1, we find that the effective theory in 4 dimensions, which has USP2N minus 2 gauge group, has this spectrum. So it has a fundamental plus a bunch of singlets. You have an SP theory in 4 dimensions with a fundamental. This has the Witten anomaly again. So we found a very surprising conclusion that the SP theory in 8 dimensions, when you put it in S4, I put an instanton bundle, the effective theory in 4 dimensions has a Witten anomaly, which means the 8-dimensional theory has some sort of problem. If you're a string theorist, this should shock you. Because this is the effective theory in an O7 plus. And I'm saying that the O7 plus theory has an anomaly. But the analysis is robust. It's a very simple index theory computation. So here comes our proposal to how to fix this. We believe, although we cannot prove it, that there's a way of fixing this, and the O7 plus actually does make sense in a string theory. If it doesn't, then we're in trouble. So to do that, I have to introduce a little more fancy viewpoint on anomalies. It's originally due to Dye and Free, as you know. So consider the case in which your space-time is the boundary of some manifold Y, so X is the boundary of Y. And everything that you can do over X extends over Y. Assume that's the case. In that case, you can define, according to Dye and Fried, the full path integral, including the problematic phase, by doing the following complicated thing. You look at the modulus of the partition function on X, the fermion. I argued before that this is well defined, so choose any way of defining this you like. But just all give the same answer. And for picking up the phase, which is the problematic part, what you do is you compute the item variant of Y, coupled to the Dirac operator natural coming from the fermion. So what's the item variant? The item variant is what appears in the APS index theorem. But the definition is you sum over the spectrum of the Dirac operator, and this is the sum of the non-zero eigenvalues, and you sum over the sums. And there are natural ways of regulating these sums, which give you a final value. And you add to this the dimension of the kernel of the operator, and you divide by 2. This thing has very nice properties, but in terms of the definition, that's one way of defining. So the statement of Diane Fried is that if you consider this complicated thing in Y, this gives you a sensible definition for the phase of the fermion in X.
Yeah. Is this some obvious formula?
This is not obvious at all. Yeah. No.
So where does it come from?
One way of understanding this formula is when you look at the anomaly of a fermion. This is typically given in one dimension higher as some sort of mod 2 index or eta invariant. This comes from the old papers on anomalies. So in a sense, this is formalizing that. It's telling you that if you want to look at the phase of this guy, the thing that's problematic is the anomaly, and the anomaly is always some sort of eta invariant in dimensions higher. The thing that's non-trivial at all is that if you multiply these two things, this behaves properly as a field in X in the boundary, because it seems to depend on the whole thing. But it formalizes the intuition that anomalies are some sort of eta invariant in higher dimensions. At least that's the way I understand it. Maybe. This is not the only thing you could write. In principle, you can consider any topological quantum field theory that encodes the anomaly of the fermions. But for a simple fermion, this is the most natural thing. So in this language, anomalies are kind of very transparent. That's the virtue of this formalism. Anomalies are when you cannot define the phase of the partition function in X uniquely, because it depends on the choice of extension to Y. So say you have a manifold X, and you construct two extensions, Y and Y prime. The prescription that I am free to tell you depends on the extension, so it could be the case that the answer you get from looking at this and the answer you get from looking at this are not the same. That's an anomaly. That's a way of, you have that, you cannot define the path integral, sorry, the phase of the path integral in a natural way, at least with this prescription. So the natural thing to do to compute when you can have such an anomaly is to glue the manifolds. This gives you a closed manifold W, so the thing I drew here. You remove this middle part. Now this is W. And the partition function is well defined as a function of fields of X. If for any choice of W, this phase is 1. Doesn't mean that the phase in X is always 1. It means that there's no dependence on the extension. Because once you glue the two things, you always get the 1. So this is a very neat way of checking for anomalies, because if you can do this, then you know the theory is anomaly free. So just to connect to the older stuff, so Witten's four dimensional G2 anomaly, what he argued is basically that the anomaly is given by the mod 2 index. And he chose a particular manifold Y, which is the mapping torus. So for him, there was an anomaly if the mod 2 index, which is the dimension of the kernel of the Dirac operator in five dimensions, is 1 modulo 2. So if this is so. So how do you rephrase this in terms of eta? Well, so in five dimensional theories and the fundamental of SG2, what you have is a Dirac operator which is antisymmetric and real. So remember I was telling you before the Dirac operator was real, and you can also check that it's antisymmetric. So formally, even if that's an infinite set of eigenvalues, you can diagonalize it. So there will be a bunch of zeros coming from the kernel, and then a bunch of pairs of zero modes. Data invariant, remember, it was defined in this way. So at least formally, you can make this more precise with regularizations, but it's clear what the answer will be. These things cancel in pairs because of this sum, and you end up with half of the dimension kernel Y. So in this particular case, you find that with Witten wrote, which is the mod 2 index, is precisely equal to the eta invariant. So this is a simple exercise that tells you that what you're doing is sensible. The example I want to discuss to motivate this generalized Green Schwarz mechanism is a little bit different, but related, of course, is the parity anomaly in three dimensions. So consider a Dirac fermion in three dimensions in the fundamental of SU8. And really show that you can quantize this theory, preserving both parity and Gitche invariant. We call this the parity anomaly. So this is encoded in having an anomaly theory. Remember, this was the phase of the path integral, one dimension higher, which is given by half the instanton number of the SUM bundle that you put. That's a possible choice for the phase of the path integral. And it's related to the eta invariant, but I won't go into that. You can just view this as a different choice for what I put here for the phase. So in this case, you can define the phase of the partition function to be this. And well, clearly, this is not something that's always to be 1. That's not always going to be 1. Because for the fundamental representation of SUN, you can put an instanton with instanton number 1. And then this will be minus 1 to the 1, which is 1, minus 1. So this tells you that there's a problem with defining the phase of this theory consistently. And precisely, that encodes the parity number. So well, another thing you can observe is that since this trace F squared is reduced to a usual statement, a chance Simons term gives you an anomaly. But this is a nicer way of viewing it that unifies with higher dimensional cases. So that was very old stuff. The thing that I hadn't seen before, probably somebody had done it before, consider the case in which the fermion is a Majorana fermion, which is in the adjoint of SUN. And you choose the global form of the gauge group to be SUN mod CN, not SUN. You can do it because the joint is also a representation of it. The anomaly theory is basically the same one as before, so it's one half of another one half which comes from the Majorana condition times the trace in the adjoint this time of the instant. Now in SUN, the trace of the joint is 2n times the trace in the fundamental, so it gives you n over 2 times the instant number. And now this anomaly theory is non-trivial, since SUN instantons come from minimal instant charge 1 over in these conventions. So we have a theory with a real representation that has an anomaly. Of course, if you have an instanton that has charge 1 over n, it must be the case that this instanton cannot live to an SUN instant. So the way you measure this obstruction to lifting, you cannot lift to SUN instanton simply because any SUN instanton has integral instanton number. So if you want something non-integral, it must be the case that cannot be lifted. And the thing that measures the obstruction for lifting a SUN mod C bundle to an SUN bundle is the Stifel-Whitney class, with the instanton number being the square of the Stifel-Whitney class, mod C. This is all to say that the anomaly theory can be written very neatly as some sort of a square of some Stifel-Whitney class. So this is nice, why? Because, well, in principle, this theory has an anomaly. If you insist on keeping parity, for example, this theory is anomaly free, you cannot gauge the gauge group. You cannot gauge the symmetry. But you can cure it. Why? Well, you can construct a topological quantum field theory, a gap theory, living in three dimensions, that has the same anomaly theory. When you superpose worse things, even if you haven't changed the local degrees of freedom, the path integral is now well-defined in any format. The path integral of the anomaly theory. It's one in every format. So choose this particular combination. This was raised by a paper by Kapustin. The important thing is that if your three manifold M is the boundary of some N, you can see that this term here, which is some sort of Chern-Simons term, if you squint enough, maps to some F times E. F, some field strength, E, another form of field strength. So this is similar to the kind of Chern-Simons terms or Green-Schwarz term you encounter in string theory, which are B wedge F or B wedge H. But this is a discrete version of it. When you put this in a compact manifold, you can drop the D's here, and you end up with X times Y. So in the previous case, you choose X equal to Y equal to the Stifel-Whitney class, you get the square that you wanted before. So the details are not terribly important because they will not generalize to 8 dimensions, but this tells you the basic physical idea, which is even if your three-dimensional theory seems to have an anomaly, you can couple it to some massive topological quantum field theory, no local degrees of freedom, and cancel the anomaly. Okay. And so that's not something local observer would see, but it's something you can do. And this is interesting because the Ossian plane, most likely in string theory, will have such a theory. But we cannot construct it, unfortunately, because the math is more difficult. So naively, you like to put something like x equal to the instanton number in the S4, and y equal to the mod 2 index in 5 dimensions. That counts the anomaly of the resulting theory. But unfortunately, the mod 2 index is not something you can write as an integral of some local density, standard fact. For example, in S5, you can see that there are configurations that have a non-zero mod 2 index, but there's no characteristic class that you can integrate in S5 to detect it. So this thing cannot be some form or some local thing. But something that seems promising, we could do kind of half of the job, is what you get if you go to K-theory. So K-theory is what classifies bundles, modulo some sort of stability, and there's a version that works for SP bundles, which is called K-SP theory. So if you put a bundle, it's defined some class in SP, which is some class in KO also, and the natural anomaly theory, so the thing that will live in 9 dimensions, seems to be something like this, the integral of the square of this class. The details are in the paper, and I don't want to spend time, first of all, because I don't have a lot, and second, because we don't finish the argument. But this seems suggestive. So the anomaly theory seems to be something like this, The thing we will need to know is if you put this theory on a spacetime with boundary, what lives on the boundary? The conjecture is that there's some topological control theory in 8 dimensions that appears from the restriction of this theory to manifold with boundary. So what I mean by this. So you have the picture is something like this. You have here 9-dimensional theory, and the action here is this integral of chi squared. And this is a K-theory class. So this is not something that, it looks like a form the way I written, but it's actually a K-theory class, which is not so easy to write some action. The statement is if you construct, if this X9 has a boundary, which is Y8, then on Y8, you have some sort of topological quantum theory. And we'd like to construct this, but we couldn't. If anybody can do that, that would be interesting because it's the thing that proves the consistency of a string theory in this.
So in the previous example, can I view the TQFT as a ZNS pretty first?
Yep, sorry.
Can I view, in the previous example of SUN mod ZN history, can I view the TQFT which cured the anomaly as a ZNS pretty first?
As a
ZN being guessed?
Yeah, yeah. It's a ZN discrete symmetry that you have. It's some sort of theory for a ZN gauge symmetry. That's what you're asking.
Is it an SPT phase? An invertible?
SPT, yeah, it's invertible for sure. I'm 100% sure if it's SPT or not. I don't know.
So it's an invertible TQFT, right?
Yeah, it's invertible. It's an anomaly theory, it's invertible, but not 100% if it's SPT.
That's what it means. Invertible and SPT is the same thing.
One thing if it protects some symmetry or something.
Yes, it's Zn symmetry.
You're probably right. I'm not 100% sure. Mm-hmm. Well, in any case, that's an interesting point because if this thing we're proposing here, which seems to be a natural thing, is true, then you need some generalization of that sort of ideas to K-theory. Which could be of interest by itself. Okay, so I have a couple of minutes maybe to say something about why this thing we are proposing shouldn't work for the Witten anomaly. And the intuition is basically that the global anomaly that Witten constructed is in some sense local. And by local, I mean local in a spacetime, not in a space of configuration. This is because it deals with gauge transformations, which can be restricted to arbitrarily small neighborhoods. So in a sense, you can make the transformation in a point, a tiny neighborhood as a point. So the effective thing that the anomaly theory should do should have the following properties. Should reduce to some polynomial in the local massless fields, so the connection, due to locality. Basically, you're doing something locally, so you should have some local polynomial form. Has an effective action which is invariant under gauge transformations which are connected to the entity because this thing doesn't have any local anomaly, but it does pick a sign under the gauge transformations which are not connected to the entity. And these things seem to be something you can fulfill at the same time, at least in even dimensions. So it seems like those anomalies which are associated to pi d, so the small ones, this cannot be fixed. The ones that are associated to more complicated manifolds, perhaps. So. Okay. So we reduced a little bit the gap between what you seem to be able to do in 8 dimensions, which is everything, and what you can do in a string theory, which is very little. So before this was not noticed because local anomalies are absent. So they seem to be no constraint, but if you are more careful about global anomalies, you can say something. So we find that 2 things that you can construct in a string theory are actually anomalous. Surprisingly, the G2 seems to be not anomalous in 8 dimensions. To the extent that we checked, at least, but there's no known construction. So an open problem is whether we missed some check or whether this is truly consistent in the AR. So perhaps there's some string theory construction to be found. And we found some quite unexpected anomaly for SP, and that's the OSM plus. And I say this potentially fixable, but this better be fixable, because otherwise string theory is in trouble. But we have not worked out the details. What will happen probably, I believe, is that if you are smart enough to construct such a theory, you will be able to fix the problem that one should fix. So there are many things that are still unexplained already in 8 main dimensions. So I said nothing about the rank. But the rank that appears in string theory is very constrained. It's 4, 12, and 20. And this is already very suggestive. The jumping rank is by units of 8, which typically appears all the time in the anomaly business. Another thing that is more surprising to me is that it finishes at 20. I don't know how to explain. Also, at some of these ranks, for example, rank 20, you don't get any non-simply laced algebras. So why is that? It's not clear at all. But there are many other checks that one should do before I get too worried about these facts. So even in the IR, I haven't imposed that I'm able to couple consistently to gravity. I'm not talking here about Swampland or anything like that. I'm just talking at mixed gravity anomalies and pure gravity anomalies. So I haven't really done that. And since you're in string theory, you probably want to care about non-orbital space-time. So that's another exercise one should do. And maybe that explains part of the pattern you see here. Part of the reason why I gave all this big discussion out, just a couple of slides, about Diffreed, even if I didn't quite use it later, is because this gives a nice classification, or a nice way of proving that theory is anomaly free. So if you can prove that this thing is really one, if you can prove it for every spacetime, then you know that the theory is consistent. And this is something you should do for string theories, not enough to kill the ones that don't appear in string theory, but you also want to prove that the ones that do appear are consistent. And that's something that you can probably do, so one should try to do it. And one thing I didn't discuss at all is the nine-dimensional analysis, which is important. It should be in some sense simpler, and remains to be done. And everything I did here was about anomalies, sort of a classical analysis. Of course, the interest here is which kind of things are not killed by anomalies, and those might be killed by Swampland arguments, by constraints that come from having a consistent coupling to gravity in the UV. So this is a totally open question that I believe should be answered also in 9 and 8 dimensions. Okay. So I'll stop here. Thanks.
Can I have anomaly inflow from the 10-dimensional bulk on the 7 plus plane to cancel this anomaly?
That's a very good question. You know, you don't cancel gauge anomalies with anomaly inflow, right? You cancel global anomalies. And M5 has the R symmetry as a global anomaly, and you cancel that. It's gauged in the 10-dimensional theory, but from the point of view of the M5, it's a global symmetry, you cancel that. So, if something like that works, it will be a little bit exotic, I believe. But I cannot say like it's impossible.
These anomalies don't depend at all on having, say, a product group. Like, there are other factors in the cage group that affect anomalies.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're thinking about outer or something like that?
Well, it's the type 2B expect example, right? You have several of 7 frames.
Right, you could do that.
There's living at different ones,
right? Draw units, something like that. There are some patterns. This question and the generalization of this question that tells you that only some lattices appear here. And that's a statement about how the different possible groups appear. So there's something about interactions that I hopefully work.
That might just be a UV thing.
Maybe? Degree.
That might just be a UV thing. Like not the anomaly.
Probably. I mean, possibly. I don't know.
But none of your anomaly constraints change if you have a product group.
Not so far. There are things that do depend on things like ranks. In lower dimensions, for example, it's known that sometimes you need to have a certain net number of fermions to cancel gravity anomalies. So interplay of that with standard gauge anomalies may give you some of those constraints. It has to be done, basically.
Now let's thank the speaker again.